What's up, everybody? Welcome to SWAT MMA. This is episode number 154. I'm Jared here with Paul.
What up?
Coming to you from the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas. On this episode, we're going to be taking a look back at 2022. We're going to go over our fights of the year, the biggest upset of the year, our knockouts of the year. Then we're going to look ahead to the upcoming 2023. We're going to pick the biggest fights that we want to see and come up with some predictions, some usual, some crazy ones. Before we get to the combat sports, you know what time it is. Grab your weed, fire it up, and let's ring in the new year with the weed of the week.
Smoke weed every day.
All right, happy new year, everybody. And we're coming in with this one with some item nine.
Item nine. This is a new one for me. We've been puffing on this pre-show here.
Yeah.
It's actually a pre-show fucking joint. We're finishing up on the show. It's pretty tasty.
What's
in it?
This one is a three-way cross of Exodus cheese, G13, and Hawaiian. It's 22% THC.
I'm not familiar with Exodus cheese. G13 is jet fuel. Hawaiian is a pretty... I mean, if you're talking about Hawaiian, the classic sativa strain.
Yeah, this has a pretty solid terpene profile as well. Got some limonene, linalool, carophyllene, and myrcene.
Who's the company on that? Because they've done a nice job. That was pretty
Clear
smooth.
River.
I haven't smoked their brand before.
Yeah.
You know, we're getting a few more growers in Vegas now as more licenses get awarded to people. You know, they put a cap on things and they release a few, and now we're getting some more experienced people coming in, it seems like, because the weed is getting a little bit better.
It's getting better and it's getting cheaper also.
Yeah.
That's what's good. It's like a big thing with all the, we've talked about this before, but like with all the dispensaries like in Oregon and Washington, and they end up on sometimes end up on like stockpiles of weed because they're so much easier to get. Like licenses out there, people have perfected shit, and they're just growing like crazy. And
yeah, they actually had a 20,000-pound glut of cannabis at one point in Oregon, just due to like people growing.
It was funny because my cousin got married around that time in Oregon, and my brothers went up there and got an ounce for fucking $35.
Yeah, that's no BS. I heard there was like $4 grams.
Like it wasn't like some mids either. It was like some fucking Gorilla Glue that was like 27%. I was like, what the fuck?
That sucks for the growers out there because they're losing money on that. So there are some benefits to limiting the number of licenses that come out. It's just here it's been skewered it towards higher prices everywhere you go. And we ain't
now they're starting to pop up a lot more, and now you're starting to get a lot cheaper stuff out there.
Yeah, for real. You'll still run into some garbage weed, but this here is pretty good. We also got some, lemon skunk here today from Circle S Farms.
Yeah, that's another good one. Nice 24% THC as well.
Lemon skunk's one of my favorite strains overall. I'm going to hit this little double bowl that has it in there.
Yeah, I like all the different, like, citrus, like, strains, whether it be, you know, like all your... Lemon skunk, lemon head, all the fucking different lemons.
I had some Florida sunshine the other day as well. Lost something over there. It was pretty fucking tasty too. Nice and orangey, as the name would indicate. About Wraps Weed of the Week. We do want to thank our sponsor for the segment, which is Binoid. You can find some really cool legal cannabinoid products that are you can use in pretty much all 50 states that I'm aware of. You'll find the details on their website, but you can get yourself some really good deals on everything from vape pens to tinctures to gummies and more, all using cannabinoids derived from the hemp plant. You can get the best deals following our links at SWATMMA.com. Click on that cool stuff button. You'll see everything you need right there. So thank you to Binoid. And let us go ahead and dive into the year that was 2022, Paul.
Yeah.
Now, look, a lot of shows and a lot of podcasts cover a lot of different things, and we don't have a whole lot of categories because we don't want to get real repetitive right here. But we've each picked a fight across all of combat sports that we have chosen as our favorite of the year. And let's go ahead and start there. And why don't you kick off what was, for you, your favorite fight of 2022, Paul?
I'm going to start with Gilbert Burns versus Khamzat Chimaev, which was
UFC. What is that, middleweight?
Yeah.
Or was that a
no, that was welterweight.
Okay.
Yeah. But one of the just the craziest fights you'll ever watch. Literally to the point where you had Chimaev's corner telling him, hey, stop standing in front of him and just throwing. We need you to actually be technical. And it really was that. It was literally Gilbert Burns and Chimaev meeting at the center of the octagon and just whoever, both of them just landing everything they were throwing.
It was
one of the
most
chaotic fights I've ever seen.
Chimaev got the decision nod, if I remember right, yeah?
Yeah. It was close. I think it was a split.
It was very close. A lot of people felt that he was, quote-unquote, exposed in that fight, but I don't think that's accurate. Yeah. He was exposed as not being Superman.
Yeah.
But
Burns is an elite grappler. He was never going to do what he was able to do everyone else. Gilbert Burns.
Well, he's not going to treat him like, well.
Like Kevin Holland.
Exactly.
Like, it was not going to happen.
No, that's an absolutely great fight. What do you think is next? I mean, we haven't seen a fight for Burns since then.
Yeah, Burns is fighting. He's fighting.
Did they schedule him something? Yeah, I know there was a lot of talk about the Masvidal
fight,
but he didn't want
on that
smoke.
Brazil card against Neil Magny.
Okay. Okay.
Which is a pretty good fight.
Yeah, that's a pretty good fight. Well, for me, my favorite fight this year took place outside of the UFC, and we bounced over to BKFC. It was a BKFC 34, which saw David Mundell beat his friend, Francisco Ricci, for the middleweight title.
Yeah, that fight was chaotic.
You know, it was really interesting to me because you've got like 6'4" in Francesco versus David, who's 5'8". And we thought that the fight would unfold with David getting on the inside, you know what I mean, and ripping to the body. And we thought that Ricci's success would come on the outside. And it wound up being the opposite of that. And you had Mundell landing from the outside quite a bit and knocking Ricci down a grand total of 7 times. He winds up winning via third round KO. And if you look at the fight stats, I thought it was pretty interesting because you had Ricci throwing a lot more, 178 to 106. But then you had Mundell landing nearly 60%. He landed 58.49% of his punches total, whereas Ricci only landed 40, which was a shade over 22%, which just highlights what you saw in that fight from Mundell, which was incredible movement.
Yeah.
And being able to leap inside and land these rights to the head and then bounce back outside, just the opposite of what we all thought he would do.
Yeah.
And it was such a surprise to me. And I like seeing Mundell get the victory here and get some recognition, because he's a really hardworking guy. Like, he's been a guest on our show. If those of you listening, if this is the first time you're hearing his name, go back in our catalog, check out the interview that we did with him after his victory. This is a guy who's just a blue-collar, fucking hardworking dude who I think is going to explode a little bit more and really get some traction here in 2023 when it comes to, like, fame and recognition and hopefully the paychecks that come along with it. Because that was a lot of skill on display.
Yeah, it was such a masterful performance, like, technically. I could see that as well.
That's why BKFC is so exciting, man. Because, look, we expect technical fights for titles inside the UFC, okay? That's synonymous with UFC, almost to a fault, because now they're putting in fighters that really shouldn't be where the, quote, best of the best are. But BKFC is an evolving sport, and so you still in the prelims have, like, these wild guys trying to figure it out. But then you have this strategy and these really intelligent, high-level fight IQs unfolding in these championship bouts. That was the same card that had Palomino fighting on it against Tom Schoaf.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that was another one. You want to talk about a guy who's a masterful performer with a really high fight IQ, Louis Palomino.
Yeah.
But seeing Mundell get that victory is bittersweet for him because they were training partners, they were friends, and it was a vicious knockout. I mean, he fucked him up.
Yeah, it was bad.
And it was basically an ass-kicking all the way through.
Yeah.
And just congratulations to him once again. That's my fight of the year. And let's talk about the biggest upset now. Everybody's got one they've picked, so let's just put that one to rest. Yeah. We're not going to say it's Usman versus Leon Edwards. We understand that technically that might be the case. It was the biggest platform, right? Yeah, UFC, mixed martial arts. If we remove boxing from it, I guess, though,
see,
we didn't really
I'm gonna go at it this way though. I feel like yes, what Leon did was shocking, but was it truly an upset? I don't necessarily say.
Yeah, look at Leon's stats: 10-fight win streak,
10-fight win streak. Fighter. Yeah, like that's that. That was a much closer fight than the one that I chose as the upset of the year.
And I'm right there with you for this.
Yeah, that's Larissa Pacheco defeating Kayla Harrison in the PFL finals. Like that was literally one of, I would say it's like the PFL's version of like Ronda losing. They were like, "What the fuck is happening right now?"
If Ronda was losing to someone she'd already beat twice, rather handily.
Yeah, mm-hmm. If Ronda was like losing to Misha Tate.
Yeah, the third time they fought, Misha finally gets the win.
Yeah.
That was shocking, especially since PFL put it on their highest possible platform. Yeah. At least their attempt at their highest possible platform, which was their pay-per-view. Yeah. Now, we can argue with them and whoever about whether or not that was successful. They're not really going to tell us. I would say it probably wasn't. Whatever. That was not what the PFL wanted.
No.
Not what Kayla Harrison wanted.
No.
Congratulations to Pachenko.
Yeah.
That was, she couldn't have done better.
Yeah.
What do you think that was?
I don't know. That's got to be some. That could be like a mixture of things, I guess. But it's got to be something like Kayla wasn't as focused as normal. Like that's literally all it can be. Like, because we know technically at the end of the day that Kayla Harrison is the better fighter, but everybody has their day. So I do think it could end up like a situation where we had with Juliana Pena and Amanda Nunes, like that, like where Pena had the huge upset, and then the second time Nunes came back and showed like, okay, you caught me on a bad night. And I would hope that for Kayla Harrison, but that still was crazy to me that she dropped that fight to Pacheco. All right.
Do you think that they're going to promote a rematch in the next pay-per-view between them?
They would have
to. Or do you think that, and do you think that anybody would pay to see that?
I don't know. It wouldn't. It couldn't be the main event. It would have to be some other main event.
I don't know. We'll see if their pay-per-view experiment works. I've read conflicting reports about the PFL's pay-per-view. I heard that they were going to do 4 a year. And then I heard that it was reduced to 2 a year, but then I heard that was incorrect, that it had actually been increased to 8 per year. So I don't know what it is. There's conflicting reports out there.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah. If it's just like 2, then you can't necessarily put it as a main event. If you have 8, then it could be a main event of one of them. You know what I mean? But if you only have 2 pay-per-views, I don't think that sells as big as like, oh, Kayla Harrison versus Pacheco number 4. Like, what?
We'll see. Definitely the upset of the year. I have complete agreement with you there. Now let's move on to the 2022 knockouts of the year. We've each got our own separate ones here. Why don't you go ahead and get us started, and I'm going to hit this bowl.
I'm going with UFC Fight Night Apex 3 Billion. Chito Vera head kicking. Oh, wait, no, actually it was the one in San Diego. My bad.
Oh, it wasn't at the Apex.
Yeah.
Yeah, there actually was a crowd. Yeah, it was more memorable. Because that feels like a pay-per-view now.
Yeah,
That's absolutely the problem.
It's a better, yeah. Chito Vera head-kicking Dominic Cruz, knocking him out cold. That was one of the most devastating, like, head-kick knockouts I've ever seen. And that's going to take it for me.
And that was really a crowning moment for Vera, too, because he needed... I mean, for those of us in the MMA bubble, that's a name we know.
Yeah.
But he needs a signature win over a big name to propel him up into the rankings and get him this title fight that he's been really aching for.
Yeah.
And I agree, that was a sick knockout. Yeah. I enjoyed that a lot, too, for UFC. That was dope.
Yep. And Leon, don't get me wrong, that's an honorable mention, but everyone else is going to pick that. So
that's the thing. We don't just want to regurgitate what every other, you know, the obvious choices here. So we both looked for some slightly out of the way. That's why I've gone to boxing for mine, although across boxing, this is obviously a well-known knockout for this year. But I'm going back to October 15th at Barclays. We got Caleb Plant versus Anthony Durrell. Yeah. Plant KOs him 9th round, unconscious, after genuinely winning most rounds before then and looking like the better boxer. Like he set it up beautifully. I mean, he dips down, fires a fucking left to the hook to the body, and then he goes right back up top, left hook to the head, and fucking Darrell's unconscious, flatlined.
Yeah, that one was nasty.
Fucking nasty. And Caleb Plant is not a fighter who's got a bunch of knockouts on his resume. I mean, he's got a few, but I think he had like 11 going into this fight. So he's not a guy known for that. And I thought that that was just coming off the Canelo Alvarez loss. Couldn't have been better for
him. That's where like Caleb Plant's kind of stuck in. He's like one of the like fucking one of the elite boxers in the world, but Canelo Alvarez just happens to fight in his era. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that's kind of what it's come down to. Because like in any other weight class, I think Caleb Plant is like the champion for years. But like,
he made the most of it too. The moment, I mean, he got a little flack for it, but he did the Gravedigger celebration over his unconscious foe's body, which I don't have a problem.
Darrell was
with that
talking
shit,
like
bro.
Mad shit before.
Yeah, that fight had so that had trash talk where they actually made fucking T-shirts with trash talk on it.
Yeah,
I mean, like. He has a right to do whatever he wants to after the fight like that when it's been heated going into it. So
yeah.
I fucking enjoyed that a lot, though. So that for me was it. Caleb Plant getting that vicious knockout over Anthony Durrell in the ninth.
It's a good one. All right, so now I want to know who is your fighter of the year.
Nate motherfucking Diaz.
Yeah, I mean, when I look at Nate Diaz and what he did, like, here's the thing. There was a lot of, like, weird upsets this year that really, like, was making it really hard to pick who was really the fighter of the year. There was no one who had just, like, a super dominant year in my eyes. Like, because when you look at, like, what was accomplished by Nathan Diaz this year was nuts. So first, he puts together a pay-per-view that everybody knew was never going to happen. Everyone had all these like doubts, like he was going to get killed.
And you're talking about Chimaev versus Diaz.
And he was going to get killed.
Which he basically got strong-armed into taking.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
I mean,
he was going to get killed. It was last fight on this deal. They're trying to like ruin his career on his way out. Like, there was all these, like, negative narratives going into the fight.
Yeah, and his trajectory afterwards was not looking well.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's a fight. Everybody's got a chance. And as a refresher, let's talk about our understanding of how he was kind of not, he wasn't strong-armed into the fight, but the UFC did him a little bit dirty from what we understand. And I believe it was Ariel Helwani's reporting that said basically Diaz publicly came out and said, look, I'll take any fucking fight at this point. You give me a fight, I will take it. He says it publicly, and then UFC whips together a contract and puts it out there that he's agreed to fight Chimaev, which he technically did when he said he'd fight anybody publicly.
Yeah.
And then he just went with it.
Well, and that's the thing.
It was the last fight of his contract. He hits free agency, and if he went out with a fucking shellacking by this dude, it was really going to damage his value.
And that's the thing, too. He never really, like, publicly was like, I'll fight Chimaev. Like, it was exactly what he said. He was on Ariel Helwani's show, and they were like, Ariel was like, oh, how come you haven't fought? He's like, no one wants to fight me. He's like, well, who would you fight all the guys at the top? He was like, Usman, Colby, and then he said Chimaev, and then he said yes to all three. And so then he was like, oh, so Hunter Campbell went and was like, oh, he agreed to fight Chimaev. Like,
and there it was.
So going into this fight, he kept his cool, did his job, everything was cool.
Yeah, he did.
Chimaev is the one who fucked it all up and turned this into Nate Diaz's fucking send-off party where he fought Tony Ferguson and put on a masterful Nate Diaz-esque performance that, like, was just the most Nate Diaz way to go out.
Our understanding of how it went down, of course, is just what you said, is Chimaev fucked it up by missing weight egregiously.
Yeah.
Like, it was like 8 pounds or something. Like, you're in a whole weight class above.
Yeah.
And so Ferguson gets the fight, which is way better for us as fans.
Yeah.
Okay, and from what we understand, Diaz was able to parlay that into a higher payday,
because
like Kevin Holland was for taking the Chimaev fight, which is where he wound, that wound up going. So Diaz gets a higher payday.
Yeah.
He gets a competitive fight against someone else that's basically where he's at, like a veteran who's maybe not at the tip-top of their game anymore, who's not really fighting for a title tomorrow. No disrespect intended here.
Yeah.
So he wins that fight. Exits the UFC with a fucking his first finish in several years of a fucking known fighter in a great bout. And hits like free Diaz agency on a fucking winning note with like the getting the biggest W out of the entire fucking event. Well, Chimaev fucking looked like shit. Ferguson looked okay. I mean, he was doing all right. It was a great fight.
Yeah.
But Diaz really just flipped the whole script from like, we're going to fuck you on your way out to the door to like, nah.
Peace out, bitch.
I fucking call the shots here. I'm going to get the W. I'm going to get all this fucking shine to where even fucking Dana and the presser had to be like, well, we love Nate and wish him nothing but the best. Which is not what he wanted to say.
No, it's not.
I don't give a fuck. And now Nate holds all the cards. He made it through the 90-day negotiating period, and now he is free to do whatever the hell he wants to, which... it's such a better position than if he was coming off getting a probable ass kicking by fucking Chimaev and the bad press that would have followed with that. Chimaev would have been there talking shit. Diaz would have just been like, and there wouldn't have been as much interest. He's still Nate Diaz. He still would have gone elsewhere. But yeah, that's why he's fighter of the year.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think anybody really changed their fortunes as much as he did. Now, you could say that somebody who won a championship like Leon Edwards did, but Leon was already getting paid, and he was right knocking at that door, and this wouldn't have been his last opportunity either. Yeah. Diaz completely changed it into anything from a massive Logan Paul fight to something with Conor and boxing. Who the fuck knows? We'll see.
Yep, I agree. That's so I think that puts a kind of a finish on 2022 for us. A great year of fights. Now let's look forward for a little bit here. So give me a couple fights that you think are like the biggest fight that you would maybe want.
My wish list for 2023 in mixed martial arts. Paul, it comes down to one fight and one fight only. In fact, if I could say I won't watch any other fights all year, if you just give me this one.
Oh,
that fight? That's what you want to hear?
Let's hear it.
Oh, that's easy. It's John Jones versus Stipe Miocic. I don't care if it's for the title or not, as long as it's five rounds. I prefer it's for the vacant title after Ngannou stays or leaves. We'll get to that. That's my fight, though. That is the greatest light heavyweight versus the most decorated and possibly greatest UFC heavyweight. Definitely the most decorated. It's the best versus the best for all the fucking marbles. And you've got both guys have bulked up now, too. This isn't even big John Jones versus what Stipe used to look like. Stipe's been off chilling, and he ain't just been fucking sitting on the couch eating potatoes and then running out and saving people from fires. Yeah. Motherfucker's been hitting the gym. He's like fucking 250. He's put on like 20 fucking pounds of muscle. And on a frame like Stipe's, he's looking fucking large. Wyvern says he's fucking stacked. So you're going to have stacked-ass John Jones versus fucking big old Stipe.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting matchup, too, because I wonder how John holds that fucking size.
I mean, look at their joint shit with Daniel Cormier, too. I mean, look at the shared history with Cormier right there.
Yeah.
How does it get more perfect than that to find out who's the best? That's who's the best heavyweight, because the winner of that is the best heavyweight.
If that's what we're... I'm just going to be honest with you, though. If we're going to use Cormier's example of like how both of them handled fighting Daniel Cormier...
Well, they're a different Cormier, though, because you can't say it's the same, because one's a 205 Cormier, and one's a fucking... That's whatever true. His fat ass was.
Yeah. But, I don't know. John fucked Cormier up twice.
Absolutely.
And Stipe got knocked
out. And Stipe got knocked the fuck out once.
Yeah.
But then Stipe knocked him out, too. So
yeah, but he faced some adversity in that fight as well.
He did.
I do think that, here's the thing. John Jones, in my opinion, is the most talented mixed martial artist I've ever seen.
Yes.
Like, just like across the board.
Who even knows where he's at now? It's not like he's been sitting around on the couch either.
Yeah. And I just think that there's just so many avenues in which he can find a way to win and so many less avenues that Stipe can find a way to beat him.
I like Jones in the fight. I mean, you know, if you listen to the show, I'm a huge fan of Stipe's.
Yeah.
And I think Stipe gives him a fight. I don't think it's a wash in any way. I think that would probably be a decision and most likely a close one, frankly. But I think, yeah, you have to pick John Jones because, I mean, he's the best. He's never been beat.
Never really.
There's no reason that you would say Stipe can beat him right now unless Stipe were to beat him. But I think if Stipe beats him, this ends the goddamn argument who's the greatest UFC heavyweight of all time and possibly the greatest heavyweight ever because of the resume that John Jones brings with him and the fact that he wouldn't be an oversized 205er. He wouldn't just not cut weight and come in at 230 when he really should be a 205er. He's
that would
a legit,
be the caveat.
Legit heavyweight.
But that would be the caveat to it, though, is if John Jones goes into that fight, looks like gas because he can't hold that weight and looks slow and looks just like not himself, that
would play into the argument. Yeah.
That victory.
And I wouldn't give Stipe the credit if Jones had just
for John too,
jumped up from 205 to fight heavyweight and didn't bulk up. Like that's really not the same. You beat the light heavyweight, okay.
And that's the same thing though too, is like that's the thing for John as well. Like if Stipe comes out and looks real old, people aren't gonna really hold that win to be like, oh, he's gonna go whoop Ngannou now. Because you know, both of them are kind of at that point in their career. At their age it only goes one of two ways. You know, you either continue your dominance or you have one kind of career-defining performance where everyone looks at you and goes, okay, that guy isn't necessarily who he was before.
Right.
And that's kind of why I feel like that's an even bigger legacy fight for those two also, because I do think that when you talk about the UFC heavyweight division, not that they've been counted out of the picture, but I feel the UFC has kind of given this overall statement when it comes to that division and how they handle it, that they're willing to move on without either of those two guys.
Yeah.
They're willing to move on without John. They're willing to move on without Stipe. They're willing to move on without Ngannou because there's guys like Ciryl Gane and Tuivasa. Not necessarily because it... When we talked about this before, it sucks for the fighters because you have a bunch of these fighters that like then kind of you feel weird about because it's like not that they're not good, but the UFC is just doing this like purposely to get at another guy. You know what I mean? Like, when you had Ciryl Gane fight for the interim title, it was just to make him fight fucking Ngannou. It had nothing to do with any kind of merit whatsoever.
No.
And I feel like they tend to do that with the heavyweight division. So that's why.
Yeah, there's no guarantee this fight happens, but
well, not that. But I'm saying I feel like that's why it's even more of a legacy fight, because if either one of them wins, it's like they're back on top of the mountain of the UFC and like they're the guy again. You know,
absolutely. That's the only fight I have. That's it. That's all the marbles for me. What about you? What's your dream fight of this 2023?
So this one kind of has a few steps to it before it can actually happen. But I want Sean O'Malley versus Chito Vera for the UFC bantamweight title, probably in Madison Square Garden in November. That would be
a dream scenario. Absolute banger.
I think Sean O'Malley has the tools to possibly beat someone like Aljamain Sterling, and I do think Chito Vera has the tools to beat Corey Sandhagen as well. So as long as those two fights go well, we could be looking at something like that. Both guys have said that they want to do it. They have the history behind that already. He took Sean's undefeated, you know, record away, so he wants to get that back for sure. And he has already said that his first defense would be against Chito Vera if he were to win the title.
Right. I think it'll be a great fight, too, which actually ties right into my first prediction of 2023, which is that Sean O'Malley is going to be UFC champion.
I think he's kind of proven that at this point.
I think we're going to get Cejudo versus Sterling. I think Cejudo's probably going to win that fight. We're going to wind up with Cejudo versus O'Malley, and I think O'Malley's going to beat Henry Cejudo to win the title.
That's a very interesting
thing. Now, that's a little bit more intricate, and that might not all play out the way I think, but either way, the end result, it could be Sterling versus O'Malley as well, where I just think that O'Malley is going to go ahead and shock some of his haters and get that title.
See, what do you think is a more dangerous fight for him, though?
I mean, I think you have to say Cejudo because of his accolades at this point and what he's accomplished in the ring. But these guys are both like, O'Malley's a lot fucking bigger than Henry Cejudo is.
Yeah.
You know, they're a complete different body frame, and I don't know what Cejudo's looking like right now.
That's what I was just going to say as well. Is one thing you do have to take into account when you're talking about Henry Cejudo right now is I think actually the harder fight for him would be Aljamain Sterling because of that size difference you were talking about. Because when you look at Cejudo and O'Malley, yeah, Cejudo's probably going to be very successful when it comes to like the grappling game against O'Malley, but I do think that Cejudo doesn't have like a ton of jiu-jitsu, and I think that O'Malley's jiu-jitsu is probably better than Henry's, but Henry's wrestling is probably better. And then it comes into like size and punching power and everything like that, and I think that O'Malley probably hits a little bit harder than Cejudo, I would say, and he's definitely going to be able to keep the range on him. And then if he's going to fight Aljamain Sterling, I'd say the biggest problem is I think Aljamain Sterling's pretty much about the same size, if not a little bit shorter than Sean O'Malley. It's not like a crazy difference like it would be with Cejudo. And I feel like Aljamain Sterling is stronger physically than Henry Cejudo.
Yeah, we've actually met all these guys. And you're right, they're both – O'Malley's the tallest out of the group, and Sterling's not that much smaller. But Cejudo's significantly smaller than both of those smaller, guys.
And he does have a little bit more like – I don't feel like he has as much like strength as someone like Sterling, who has just literally takes people and just holds them down, and there's nothing they can do. Whereas like Cejudo looks to score with his wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
You never really see him like take someone down and dominate. He knows when to wrestle and when to strike. So he does end up striking a lot, and I think that'd be a dangerous game to play with Sean O'Malley.
Well, that's my prediction though. O'Malley's going to win the title. And more specifically, I think he does it by beating Henry Cejudo. Now, when it comes to Aljamain versus Cejudo, look, the fan in me wants Aljamain Sterling to win. I love Aljo. That's my fucking boy. I want him to win that fight. I think Cejudo's got something left in the tank, and that's coming from a guy who's not really a big fan of his. It's not like I'm a big fan of Cejudo's, and you are.
I think it's been too long. I think he's stepped away too long.
But he's been coaching. I hear you, but I think the fact that he's been coaching that I think that's going to be what's kept him sharp. We'll see.
That's true.
We'll see what
that's
happens.
A good point,
man.
Actually, yeah.
Now let's get a prediction from your side for 2023.
So since Sean O'Malley was kind of seen as like a huge prospect coming from Dana White Contender Series, I'm going to take it to a different Dana White Contender Series prospect. That's Bo Nickel. I think by the end of 2023, that Bo Nickel will be a ranked middleweight.
Mm.
I know that's not a crazy thing to say either, because it's probably he could win two or three fights.
Well, that's at the most three fights. Yeah. I mean, unless he's really active and squeezes four in, but that would be unusual. And he's not currently booked for anything.
No.
So maybe we'll get a fight in the first quarter of 2023. Maybe not. So. It could be, you know, more towards spring. We'll see. But he could get there.
He's going to put on a few performances that are just going to be like, because middleweight is kind of like a shallow division, I think he ends up in the rankings before the year ends.
I like it. I like that. My next one of three does touch on something we discussed earlier, but it has to do with UFC champion Francis Ngannou. I think that the UFC will ultimately let him leave. I think he will turn down their offers. I don't think they will match what he's able to generate if he has a matching period in there, and I think he will walk away with the title, which also ties into my hope for Stipe versus Jones for that vacant title fight or an interim before that happens. But I don't think we're going to see Ngannou in the ring. I don't think they're going to let him box. That's the one thing he's really hanging on to, is this boxing fucking deal, and it's to the point where I think it's going to be a deal breaker for him signing a new contract, because I do not see the UFC. They've never done it. I mean, yet there's the thing with Conor. That was – there's a lot of shit behind the scenes. And that
took so long to put together.
Yeah. And so it was with the one guy, fucking Floyd.
And you got to look at where the heavyweight division in boxing has gone to, where you have Fury fighting for that. He now has come back, fought twice, and now he wants to unify that title. Before, it was he had won, he had beat Wilder, everything was kind of like the sun had set, everything was great.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's become him, he's going to continue his career. So the real big difference, I think, was Floyd was already retired and done. He was done boxing.
And Conor was at peak Conor. He had obtained a fucking boxing license. Mm-hmm. He had a special relationship with the Fertittas, with Dana. Francis don't have that relationship.
Yeah, no.
They fucking throw his ass right under the bus with that title. They don't give a fuck about Francis Ngannou, bro. Yeah. They only give – it was just a whole different thing.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that Ngannou has said, on one hand, he's like, yep, I'm willing to resign, blah, 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 but I'm going to box.
Yeah.
And if I can't box, then I'm going out on my own. Well, bye-bye, Francis.
Yeah.
Enter John Jones versus Stipe and the heralding of the UFC as their two favorite guys. Two guys they like to dismiss a lot here lately are going to suddenly become their golden boys again.
Mm-hmm. Which goes into my second prediction in 2023, is John Jones becomes heavyweight champion of the world.
There you go.
I know we already touched on that a little bit, so we can kind of move on.
Let's talk about that for a second, though. Do you think, I mean, this might seem obvious, but do you think that's good or bad for the UFC if John Jones is heavyweight champ?
That's a good question, actually. I don't know. I don't really think it is going to change the landscape of the UFC if he does, you know what I mean? Because I feel like he's been such a mainstay that everyone's like, saw this coming, you know?
Do you think that he stays there for a minute and basically retires undefeated after a few rounds at heavyweight?
Yeah, I'd say he defends it two or three times and retires.
Yeah, I don't think he'd be looking to do a long extended run. It's just more of a gamble at heavyweight because of the power scenario that's up there.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I mean, if that were to play out that way, if he were to go out and win the title and then defend it at least one time, preferably twice or more, I mean, because then if he broke Stipe's record of defenses as well, which knowing John Jones and what he's shown us, that's kind of what I think he would want to do if he won the title, would be at least also be the guy that has the most defenses, just like he does at light heavyweight. It would cement his status.
Dude, how many defenses does he have at light heavyweight? Like 14?
It's something 15? A little less than that. I think it's 12. It's less than Anderson's 16.
Is it less?
Okay. Yeah.
I
thought it was. Anderson still holds the record for title defenses.
Okay.
So.
Anderson's 16.
Yeah. I like that prediction as well. I hope it happens. I like to see excellence in action, and yeah, I would love to see that play out.
Anderson
that way.
Has the most defenses. John has the most title wins, because John had those like three where it was like he got stripped, won it, stripped, won it, stripped, and won it.
Right. So. All right. What's your last prediction of the year? Then we'll finish up with mine.
So we're going to change it up a little bit. We talked about BKFC a little bit earlier, and I want to talk a little BKFC for a sec.
Okay, let's do
So I think Chad Mendez becomes the BKFC champion this year.
Featherweight champ, yeah. Chad Mendez?
I think him and Louis Palomino get
a fight. He would be lightweight there, yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
But him and Louis Palomino throw it down, and I think Mendez is able to beat
him. You think Mendez beats the reigning pound-for-pound best in bare knuckle?
Yep.
Who is Louis Palomino, who is the former WSOF champ.
And I think this also is kind of one of those like landmark points in which, like I was talking about in prior shows, where the talent pool of the division changes because you see the type of fighter that, and with the type of legacy that Chad Mendez has, win a title in that, like, in there, that's going to entice more people to be like, okay, it's time to go over there. They got legitimate guys. It's not just, you know, they're going to last a long time. You know what I mean? That's kind of the vibe I get with the talent pool at the BKFC. The better and better the talent pool, the more and more legitimate the fighters outside of BKFC will then see them as a viable option. You know what
Absolutely.
I mean?
Absolutely.
And I think Chad Mendez winning the BKFC championship kind of begins to lay down what you need to like really legitimize them as a real part of the combat sports world.
And that would tie in with something that David Feldman, the president of BKFC, said a couple weeks ago, was that, you know, we know they did that deal with Triller where Triller's giving them a bunch of cash. Well, it turns out that hasn't happened yet. They're actually not getting that cash till right around now, sometime at the beginning of the year, according to Feldman. And he said, just wait. He said, we've done all this so far without that Triller money. Everybody thinks we've got it. Yeah, we didn't. It's coming through the beginning of the year. And then he said they're making a serious push for, like, Nate Diaz.
That'd be crazy.
And that might sound crazy on the outside if you just think, oh, BKFC. But if they've got Triller's ridiculous money behind them, they might be able to come at Nate with an offer of a few million dollars to do a bare-knuckle bout.
He'd probably do it.
And, I mean, we all know Nate Diaz, the things that he hates are his wrestling and fucking people kicking his legs.
Yeah.
He's down to throw some fists. So it's not actually crazy that with that money
and
they could get something like that.
And he used to train with Andre Ward.
Yeah. So there could be big things coming from BKFC. And I'm looking forward to it. And I think Chad Mendez would make an excellent champ. And he's younger than Palomino and he has a bigger name than Palomino has. And he would get mad respect inside the bare knuckle universe, beating the guy who is really running the game right now as far as skill goes.
Yeah.
But he's also getting old. Palomino's several years older than Mendez.
Isn't he?
Yeah. Mendez is still in his mid-30s.
Yeah.
Mendez has crossed the 40.
Palomino.
Palomino's crossed the over 40s.
Yeah.
All right. Well, my final prediction then, and we'll wrap the show on this for the most part, has to do with the one and only Conor McGregor. You know, everybody is looking forward to Conor McGregor's return to combat sports.
I didn't even see what...
Everybody has been waiting for this, dude. I mean, he's putting out videos. He's fucking bulked up. They might be photoshopped. Maybe not. I don't know. He's looking fucking gigantic. He's talking about 170. The UFC gives Conor what he wants because, frankly, if Conor came in for a title shot at 170 against, I don't know, Leon Edwards, it would be humongous. It would be a gigantic pay-per-view. Yeah. Everybody knows it.
Yeah.
Everybody will forget about the fucking broken leg loss. Conor's still got enough, especially if he changes it up at a weight class, to come in fresh with a lot of noise.
Yeah.
But whatever he's doing, it's going to be big. But I have a prediction about his victory, dude. I think his only victory this fucking entire year is going to be in court against his boy, Artem Lobov.
Oh, God.
That's it. That's the big W for Conor this year. And I fucking love Conor McGregor.
Yeah.
And for those of you listening that are wondering, what the fuck are you talking about? Artem Lobov, isn't that Conor's friend? Yes, that's Conor's friend of like 7 years. The Artem Lobov that was in the UFC because of who?
Conor.
Yeah, because he was Conor's buddy. Conor brought him on to Tough. He was Conor's longtime fucking sparring partner.
Yeah.
But then here lately, suddenly, Artem Lobov has come out and filed lawsuits against Conor McGregor. And this all started with a book that Artem has wrote. And he went on a podcast and said, look, in this book, it's going to come out that I'm the guy that came up with Prop 12. That's my shit. Proper 12 whiskey was me, everybody. And that's what he's saying. And now he's suing Connor for something in the neighborhood of 10% of $600 million for his share of the Proper 12 whiskey empire.
Interesting.
Yes, and he also filed a second lawsuit against Connor for defamation because Connor came out and called him a rat and made a little song that he released on Twitter singing about how Artem Lobov is now a rat. Artem lost that case against Connor, so he's already down in the first round. And the problems for Artem are that he has publicly stated that he was offered $1 million for initially suggesting that Connor do whiskey instead of vodka, because Connor's first thing was going to be vodka. You know, the strongest man in the world, Bjorn, whatever the fuck his name is?
Yeah.
He's got a vodka, right? You remember when him and Connor were boys, and they were when the guy that plays the mountain?
Yeah, they were
fucking sparring and shit.
Yeah.
Before Proper 12 came out. Well, he has a vodka that's pretty successful, and Connor was interested in replicating that. And Artem came out and said, you know, basically it boils down to you should do whiskey instead because whiskey's bigger. And then Artem is saying that he went out and contacted all these people and put a business plan together and all this shit and presented it to Connor. And then Connor then took that and created this empire with it. Problem is that there's a public record of Connor offering him $1 million. And then Lobov saying, no, man, I will never take no money. You're my friend, and I did this because we're friends, and that was just my suggestion. Yeah. It makes it kind of hard to be like, no, I don't want your milli. And then later be like, actually, I want like 30 milli because it's all my idea. Yeah. Especially when you look at the success of Proper 12, no one is going, hey, who's that guy promoting Proper 12? The Artem dude. Everybody knows it's Connor.
Yeah, the Artem dude.
Who's that little T-Rex motherfucker? Yeah. But everybody knows you cannot say Connor has not tirelessly promoted the ever-living shit out of fucking Proper 12.
Yeah, 100%. I don't think Artem is going to have any chance in court whatsoever.
No, Connor's going to get the big fucking Duncan W here.
Yeah.
But the problem with that is I don't think he's going to win in combat sports, though. And I fucking love Connor.
Loses?
Yeah, because I think he's going to do something like fight for the welterweight title.
What if he fights Michael Chandler at 155 pounds?
He's got a decent shot of winning and or losing that fight. It's really hard to say. Cause, I mean, how different is Chandler from Poirier?
Yeah, true. He might put a pace on Connor he can't match.
And Chandler's been fighting his ass off lately. Connor's been yachting in his fucking Lamborghini yacht.
Yeah, true.
And lifting. I mean, I'm not knocking. Dude, I fucking love Connor. If this was the Connor that fought Eddie Alvarez, fucking smoke these guys.
Yeah.
But this ain't that Connor no more. This ain't hungry in the gym Connor. Maybe it is. Maybe he comes out. But I just think the odds are stacked against it, especially if he's going up a weight class and fighting somebody like Kamaru Usman. Who, let's be honest, Usman's probably going to beat Edwards to get his title back.
Yeah, but that's the thing. They put Usman on ice and they put Connor in instead.
Maybe he beats Leon Edwards. Maybe. Nah, because we all want to shit on Leon a little bit because he's Leon Edwards. I don't think he does.
Dog him probably. But him and Leon are boys, I guess.
I think Chandler, only because Chandler fights like he's Arturo Gatti.
Yeah.
Maybe Connor would fuck him up.
Yeah. Fights like an idiot, but he's like a calculated idiot.
But, I mean, Nate Diaz at Connor rocked a bit.
Yeah.
Does Chandler hit harder than Nate Diaz?
Probably, for sure.
So, I mean, now they're a different style. Diaz is long and lanky.
Yeah.
You know, Chandler's short and explosive.
It's funny, though, because you know what is really, like, hilarious to me? Is Connor is, like, a weird, has, like, a weird fucking style that, like, his biggest, like, honestly, his biggest, like, physical, like, fuck, what am I trying to say? His biggest technique disadvantages are also his biggest advantages. Like, when he fights, like, everyone says the way to beat Conor McGregor is to wrestle. If you look at all the wrestlers he's fought, he's beat them all.
Yeah.
Because, like, his style is also, like, not that he's, like, the hardest to take down, but he, like, lets you fucking wear yourself out on him. Kind of like Mendez.
Well, he didn't beat Nurmagomedov, but you could make an odd.
Yeah, but that, if you really look in that fight, that's exactly what Conor did, and that's when he had the most success. If you look at the first three rounds, when, or what is it, first two rounds, when Conor was getting, like, fucked up from on top. You saw him come out in the third, and Khabib looked kind of gassed, and Conor had his most, you know, the most interesting round, and then actually won a round, like, which no one had done on Khabib prior. So, like,
but for the most part, when he's come out against all the wrestlers that were going to whoop him, I mean, even Mendez,
but like,
he comes out with the win, but it's not because he stuffs a takedown, it's because he gets taken down and just kind of wears him out.
Yeah, and then he gets up and he carries that power. I'd say past in at least the third round, like three rounds is I'd say like the Conor McGregor hotspot. If he can hit, if he can land a punch that rocks your ass inside three rounds, he's gonna beat you. And I feel like there's none of those guys that are kind of available for him to fight right now.
No,
I love Conor, but I feel like his career is just kind of like, I don't really see any reason for him to fight anymore. Everything he's ever done and accomplished can't be replicated at this point. Does he have the hunger to fight? And if he wants to fight because he has the hunger to fight, that's fine. But do I think that he should, like, jump in against the best of the best of the best right now? Probably not.
But that's what he'll do because that's where the money is. Because that's the other thing that comes into a factor is Chandler versus Usman or Edwards. Well, what are they going to fight with Chandler for? He comes in at, there's no story there other than it's Michael Chandler and he's tough.
Yeah.
There's a big story if he goes in and fights whoever's got the welterweight belt.
Yeah.
A humongous story.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of hype and crazy and, oh my God, and Conor's so huge now and career reinvention and super fanboys of Conor's will get behind. He can do this just like I myself was in that category when he fought Floyd. I thought, man, he stands a chance here, you know? Like, and how sick would it be if he did do it? Holy fuck.
Yeah.
You know, the three belt thing, the build up will be ridiculous. That's the money. There's no money with Chandler. No. There's sporting fun for guys like me and you.
Yeah.
That's a great fight. But that ain't no money. Not this money for Chandler. Ain't no money for Conor. Big money's with the weight class above, which every sign is that he's going there. And I just don't think he can do it. I love the guy, but sorry.
Yeah. I agree.
Gets the W in court, though.
Yeah. Undefeated in court.
Fucking Artem's going to get humiliated. Fuck, man. How do you think that shit happened, dude? They went from being boys to fucking this. It's embarrassing.
Maybe he's having some money problems.
Look at fucking, it's like Masvidal and Colby, man. They go from boys to this nonsense.
The whole reason Conor fought Khabib and did the whole Dolly thing was for Artem.
Yeah, I mean, people forget that. Like,
that all happened because
arcing of his career was him defending his fucking friend.
Yeah.
Who's, people still don't seem to give any shade to Khabib for rolling up with, like, eight dudes to one and fucking slapping Artem around.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, whatever, it's not the end of the world, but, I mean, they just want to leave that part out. Like, Conor went nuts for no reason. Dude, that's called loyalty.
Yeah.
Like, Conor was willing to let his temper override common sense in defense of a friend.
Yeah.
The only reason we had that fucking film footage is because UFC Embedded is on the scene. Like, what are you going to do? They're there on the scene.
Yeah.
It wasn't like Conor was like, yo, camera crew, watch me do a publicity stunt. Yeah. He was like, you fucked with my boy? I'm fucking you up.
Yeah.
And I really like that. Like, people, you say what you want. I fuck with that all day long. You just... Yeah. Dude, you get in trouble for it. You take your trouble, man.
Yeah.
Whatever. Make bail by noon, bitch. Fuck. So I'm down on that. And to see it devolve into this bullshit, especially when Conor offered him cash from every indication that we have. We don't know behind the scenes, but
yeah
it true. Sounds like it boils down to Lobov is broke.
It might be.
That's fucking gay, man.
That sucks.
That's fucking lame as fuck.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that about wraps up the show for today.
It does. We want to thank Binoid for sponsoring our segment earlier. We want to remind everybody you can get the best deals not only from them, but from the UFC store as well by simply clicking on the Cool Gear, Cool Stuff button. I mean, at SWATMMA.com, where you can also find...
You can click the gear button and find a t-shirt and support the podcast. And then you can head over to Instagram and follow us at SWATMMA Podcast.
Thanks, everybody. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.